Hi and welcome to 360 Documentaries here on ABC Radio National. I'm Brent Clough. Today, the story of Cameron, a young man with an intellectual disability. Life for families of children with a disability is full of challenges. But one of the most heart-wrenching dilemmas parents face is what their grown children will do when they finish school. Where will they live? What kind of work will they do? And if the parents work, like Cameron's, who'll look after them? But Cam's parents, Anthea, Andrew, and stepfather Mark, were determined to make Cam's life as full, as independent, as meaningful, and as much like a typical teenager's as possible. So they brought extended family and friends together in a unique arrangement called a microboard, which creates a lifelong support network, preparing for the inevitable time when Cameron's parents are no longer around. The result is a life for Cam that his parents barely dared to dream of, and that many thought impossible. We start Cam's extraordinary journey at his father Andrew's house with producer Kirsty Melville.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
I'm Kirsty.
Come
nice
in.
To meet you.
Finished helping me with the dishes. Hey, Cameron. So we've got a visitor coming this morning.
Hi, Cameron.
Kirsty before?
Yeah, we met last week when he'd been out with Craig.
That's right. You come and check your bags packed for the day? Come and check the bag. Lunch. These are the lizard plates. Got his friend with Booker's hat.
How do you read what he means?
Well, the noises change their tone. You can go through. It's the combination. It's the facial expression. It's the hand movements and the noise. He hasn't got speech. But they're just, they all tend to mean the things. There's certainly many times when you don't know what he means, and you can see the frustration building up in him. Fortunately, when you start making the wrong guesses, he starts to laugh, so it gets to be more comical than dire. But this is a fairly obvious indication he wants to watch Mr. Bean. He's found the CD. More, I want to see that. So that's for the saying, yes, you're right. So why don't you turn on my TV?
We feel like rock stars sometimes walking up the street because people look at us all the time. Or I've seen mothers with their children cross the street to avoid going past us. And I wonder how he feels about it, you know, people. Because most people think it doesn't matter because he doesn't understand. And as you can see, that's bullshit. Look, are you allowed to swear?
This is Cameron. He's a good kid.
Hello, I'm Anthea. I'm mum to Cameron, who's my eldest son. Alistair, who's now 17, and Mark and I have a little daughter, Olivia. Cameron comes across to me to be quite a character. He finds things funny in most situations. He always gets a laugh out of things that he does. He enjoys loud music, he enjoys kicking a ball around, loves having a swim. He adores his little sister, and he'll just entertain himself by watching her, and he loves to watch people doing things. I mean, he spent a lot of time in his life always looking in.
Hi, my name's Mark. I'm Cameron's stepfather, and Cam's got a lot of interesting attributes, but he also can be quite intense sometimes. And when I've been working with people with disabilities for 26 years, and when I met Cameron, I did take a bit of a step back and think, whoa, he's an interesting guy. 6 years ago, when he was 12 or 13, his behaviour was extreme. He would have tantrums all day, scream and do certain things that were inappropriate, obviously. And he would wake up three or four times every night, seven nights a week, and Anthea would get up to him three or four times a night, seven nights a week, and that went on for years and years and years. So, yeah, it was, you know, a bit of a eye-opener for me when I first met him. I was a bit taken back, I must admit.
There's no point in disguising the fact that Cameron has a significant number of needs.
Let's go. Come on.
Cameron's 19. He was diagnosed with cerebral palsy at the age of two, which he doesn't have. Cameron doesn't have cerebral palsy, but I guess it was a label that he's ended up being stuck with for a long time now. He has an intellectual disability, and that's all I ever say now, because that's basically it. He just has a brain-related muscle disorder, which means that he stumbles a bit and he's unable to speak and do a lot of things for himself. So it's really for people who first meet Cameron, perhaps they're a little taken aback because he cannot speak. He has some quirky behaviours, we like to call them.
Howdy. Good morning. All right.
Hi.
Uh-oh, not ready to go, Mr. Bean. Hello, Cam. Hello. You ready to go? Come on, mate. Oi, Cameron.
Cameron's support worker, Craig, has arrived at Cam's dad's house to take him out to work for the day.
Can you come for a drive? Come on.
You
got that plug.
Yeah, I don't know.
He doesn't want to leave.
But he'll follow. He just... a bit of a show of force, I suppose. But he gets up eventually and he realises that no one's taking interest in him. But he does play on...
he knows when there's new people and things like this.
Because
so.
I'm here.
That would be...
Yeah. 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 Come on, Cameron. Some of us have got to go to work. You're one of them.
Yeah, you included.
You're one of them.
So vending machines today?
Yeah, he's got to do between 8 and 10, 12 with Craig today. And I don't know much how he does there, whether he gets in there, puts the cans in, or whether he just helps, pushes a trolley around. But he's got 30, 40, 50 years of working life to go. And maybe in 10, 15 years he will pick it up, maybe in 2 years. So, but this is all just setting him up for the future.
The life that people with disabilities had in the past is not the kind of life I wanted for Cameron. People with disabilities in the past have been totally devalued, always given the worst of everything. I was just really aware that Cameron would have fallen into that category, and so I'm a little bit stubborn, and maybe that's a good thing because I was really determined that that wasn't going to happen. And whatever it took, it was going to be a good life that Cameron would have in the end, but I had no idea how that was going to happen.
So what's the plan for today?
Hopefully get him up. And then we'll go and get the van with all the drinks, and then we'll go to all the machines and go and fill them up. Just dependent on the boy at the moment.
Cameron.
I remember the first few times I hung out with him, it was throw yourself on the ground and often in the most inconvenient places.
It can be quite physical having to move him, lift him, guide him through things. But he hasn't moved yet.
At least, yeah, he's on the ground. So,
it's a waiting game.
I suppose it's one thing that he's got control over, so it's not too many things that he has, so you got to understand it like that, I guess.
Cameron's able to walk, however, he has difficulty negotiating different surfaces. Cameron has epilepsy. He doesn't have a lot of seizures, but enough to be on medication. His fine motor skills are pretty poor. Cameron can't hold a pen, for example. Well, he can, but he cannot write. Coordination is certainly difficult for Cameron. Turning pages in a book is really difficult. Anything that involves putting your two fingers together is awkward. However, he can eat meals on his own. He's quite self-sufficient. We'll select clothes together, so on the days that he goes to work, the work shirt comes out. I'll assist him with that, but he knows which is his work shirt. He knows which is his docker's boxes and things like that. He wears what we call ICs, incontinence products. Yeah, all his personal care needs are met by myself or his dad.
Can you get the soap, Cameron? That's the way. Ooh. Yeah.
I guess it was a slow realisation. So Cameron was born with a disability, but I didn't know that straight away. He was just like every other little gorgeous baby. And I, being perhaps a typical mother, was reluctant to notice the milestones that he didn't achieve. And in fact, that just started with things like he wasn't sitting up correctly, he had a slightly crossed eye. In fact, it wasn't really until Alistair, Cameron's younger brother, was born, and he did things so easily, that the penny really dropped, and I thought, okay, so maybe Cameron isn't going to catch up quite the same. And even Mark is still surprised because, you know, by the time Cameron turned 5 and 6 and it was that time to go to school, I really believed that he just needed a little more time and he'd catch up to the other kids, but he really was nowhere near meeting those achievements, I guess.
Gently with this. Gently. Too precious.
Okay.
No showing. Yeah. Not too high.
Perhaps one of the more frustrating things was that Cameron was unable to go to any childcare facilities, and it was at those times when I was quite run down. I could have done with a little bit of space to myself, and nobody would look after Cameron, not even for a little while. And one thing I clearly remember is even from when Cameron was about 5 years old, people would often say to me, "Oh, and does he still live with you?" It just seemed so ludicrous. I mean, we were excluded from things within our community. So, you know, I started going along to play group and we were just not included in the same way. But I think people didn't know how to. I don't know why. And that made life pretty hard for me because I wanted to do the typical mum thing and chat and have coffees and things. But I wanted him to experience, you know, mixing with other kids as well. But, I guess I got tired of being at home, and that the home sort of became a little bit like my prison in a way. So it was a bit of a blessing when the school days came around, but little was I to know then how draining and what a different journey that was going to be as well.
Yeah,
Cameron went to his local kindy, and that was fantastic. And then, of course, the next step is to go to primary school. And I recall this ever so clearly because there was a meeting called, and I turned up to the meeting with Andrew, Cameron's dad, and there were a cast of thousands. There was a principal, there was psychologists, there were teachers, there were pre-primary people, there were teacher assistants, there was a Disability Service Commission, and it was pretty much a railroad meeting, at the end of which we were told Cameron would be attending an Ed Support School.
You're not given an option to stay at your local school?
No, definitely not, definitely not. And there began the destruction, I suppose, in his life in terms of being segregated and removed from people that he knows. It felt really strange to be sending Alistair to this school and Cameron to this school, to have the big orange bus pull up out the front of the house every morning, and Cameron didn't want to get on. We literally had to almost carry him on, and it was heart-wrenching. And it really wasn't until after a few years had been at Castlereagh that I began to realise that this really wasn't good. And even back then, I thought, no, Cameron's going to have a job when he leaves school. He's going to do all the things that his brother does. And I now know that I need to move him from this school. We then enrolled Cameron at Leeming High School, and he started going to school there.
Mom.
More eating and less talking.
Can you really just talk
talk to Cameron.
I don't really... Oh, well.
Just... Dewey, you enjoying your dinner? Yeah. A little steak.
Should be saying how's work today these days.
I know.
He's thinking the same thing. This is weird. It's just, it's really quite difficult to talk to Cameron because he doesn't speak back to you.
But you can really connect with Cameron. If you catch his eye, you can talk to him by looking at him. Don't you?
Hey.
Yeah. And he knows exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Do you find it difficult when the person can't speak?
I don't find it difficult from my perspective for the story. It would be great if you could speak to get his opinion on stuff.
We've always said that.
Yeah. And I guess that's why I'm working so hard to try and get you to give me a sense of who he is. And
yeah, because he can't do that.
Because he can't do that. So, because I can hear when he's happy in his responses now. And so I'm hoping that the audience can hear that.
One of the things we are concerned about is that when people hear him, they don't make assumptions about who he is because he can't speak. And he makes noises to express himself rather than words when he's not happy with a person. You can really sense it. He shows it. He displays it through his behaviour. When he's bored as well, boredom is his worst enemy. I think he's been bored for 18 years. So certainly this job of his gives him so much variety that he's happy. He's hugging his mother more often. You know, his life has changed significantly over the last... since he left school. Thank God.
Typically, when people leave school, like Alistair, for example, he knows that he's going to go to university or further studies. With Cameron... it was really important to us that Cameron had the opportunity to meet people because they're the glue that holds your life together, and for someone as vulnerable as Cameron, he's really going to need that. I'm not going to be here forever. I'm not going to be able to ensure that everything is right for him for the rest of his life because I won't be here for all of that time. It was around that time that we heard about the concept of microboards and how they were designed to support person who had a disability.
Quite simply, a microboard, I guess, is a small group of people that gather regularly with the person with a disability. Obviously, they're at the centre of everything that a microboard does to achieve what their dreams, wants, aspirations and needs are. There's 500, I think, microboards operating in Canada and have been for more than 15 years. We knew that family should be involved. So myself and Anthea and Andrew and Alistair and, of course, Olivia were the first people that were considered for the microboard. And then there were some other people that said, gee, that sounds like a really interesting concept. Tell us more. Microboards aren't paid people. They're Cameron's friends. Some of them used to be paid support people and then came to us and said, we no longer want to be paid for this. In fact, we want to be part of Cameron's life. And it was really quite timely that we kind of got hold of this concept at the time and said, hey, how would you like to be part of Cameron's microboard then? Because you can help Cameron make some life decisions and move into the future in terms of his employment when he leaves school and eventually where he might live and how he might live in the future.
Taking a step back, though, we had a planning day for Cameron in 2006. And so we looked at his life and what we wanted in the future. To go on a holiday would be a great achievement for Cameron, to have a job when he leaves school, to have his own home, to spend some time down at the farm. Cameron has relatives who live on the farm and he really enjoys going there, going to the football, going to movies, things that weren't happening in his life at all at that stage. So it was very timely for us because we had a number of people who already knew about these goals. So we carefully chose people to be on the microboard.
That's Anthea, whose 19-year-old son Cameron has an intellectual disability.
Oh, not their farm. Not the farm.
We're going to Arthur River.
Yeah.
Oh, are we? Oh, good.
They're all working down there today.
And on ABC Radio National, you're listening to 360 with me, Kirsty Melville. Cameron's microboard meets monthly. This month, they've hired a minivan and are driving out to his auntie's farm to have their meeting.
Just pull up the front driveway. There's Meredith. Just here. far as going. They don't only have the friendly dogs here.
Hello, how are you?
How are you going?
I'm Meredith Freeburn. I'm Cameron's auntie through Andrew, his father. And I've been on the board since the inception as a family member, as a support for my brother, and as also, because Cameron's one of my only two nephews. So, he's always been a major part of our life. He's been coming down to the farm since he was a newborn baby. And it's good. It's good. And you're part of that decision-making process. So if anything ever happens, you know, you're there, you know what's happening. Because, working in health industry, I do understand that there is gaps. Once people finish school, I know that's an enormously hard time. And I like the idea of the board because it was getting to the point where one or both of the parents would have had to given up work to start caring for him on a full-time basis. So, and I was very supportive of the fact that there was this board that could negate that happening.
In what ways has it negated it happening?
Well, it's brought a lot of other people into his life, and with the planning that's been going on, and as you've seen today at the meeting, there's a lot of people that have been brought in because of the different ideas that have been brought up with him having a business and the fact that the micro board has been able to help with that.
Do you want to get going?
Yeah.
So everybody get an agenda. So we thought we'd start with the planning day. That everybody knows that. Remember when we had the person-centred planning day? And had a look at what the dreams, wants, needs. We've just about achieved everything on that map, which is fantastic in such a short period of time. The only thing I think we're still working on is maybe a plane trip somewhere sometime into the future.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'm Cameron, and I was Cameron's support person while I was going through uni, and that was about 6 years ago. And I've sort of just followed it all through and become part of the micro board, I suppose, just because I'm one of the people who knows Cameron the best. You know, I've spent so much time with him and I suppose wanted to give something back. I see value and qualities in him.
Like what?
Well, he's got a wicked sense of humour. You probably saw on the bus he was mucking up in the back, but he had this big grin on his face and these little evil eyebrows going. He knew what he was doing. Yeah, he enjoys similar things to what I do. He loves going down the beach, and we used to go sailing quite a lot. He's got a good sense of humour. He's really happy-go-lucky.
And I'm Emily. I've known Cameron for 3 years through my partner, Cameron. I was invited to be a member on the micro board as I'm the same kind of age as Cameron. I'm a couple of years older, and keeping it all age-relevant to Cameron is a big thing. And having friends as much as anything on the micro board as well, so it's not all the family. And we go down the beach all the time in the summer, and going for a swim with Cam is so energetic. He gets you into the water and, you know, he wants to go for a run, whereas you find a lot of your own friends a lot of the time, they just want to sit around. So using Cam is like a ball of energy, and he's a good guy to be around.
Now, names are like Lucy's Friendly Society. Another one I like was Pick Poodle Rocking Society. So that's the sort of name that we're going to have to go for.
Cameron Whitelaw's Pit Crew.
That just needs some thought, is that what you're saying?
You could call it Cameron Blair Whitelaw Support Crew or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, something. That would be right down the
What's
line.
What's wrong with that, what, then?
Nothing.
Let's go with that, then.
What do you think, Alistair?
Well, I'm really on the fence in this issue.
Yeah, I like stuff.
So I guess the micro board, really, we get together to brainstorm ideas, because otherwise you find that a lot of the outcomes and a lot of the things that happens with Cameron's future come just from his direct family than age-appropriate people, so that he is doing things his age. We've taken him to the pub with us a few times, and, yeah, getting him to do the kind of things that an 18-year-old boy should be doing.
Recent times, you know, probably the last year or so, we've spent a lot of time talking about employment for Cameron. We actually set the goal really quite low. It would have been pamphlet round or something like that, and since the micro board's actually come online, we've gone, well, why can't we achieve something which is at a higher level?
Do you want your trolley? Do you want your trolley?
That's it. Yeah, it's Kirsty, isn't it? Yeah. You're paparazzi, mate.
I guess early days of high school, we started considering what Cameron might do, be able to do when he left school.
What are you banging for?
Somebody would need to be here with Cameron most of his waking hours. So, of course, it raised anxiety levels in all of us. I mean, we certainly didn't want him to go to anything more segregated than he was already in. So we didn't want him to go to a workshop for people with disabilities. It's continued segregation and it's warehousing people, basically. I don't think I would like any of my other children to sit in a place putting washers on a nail for the rest of their lives. We really wanted Cameron to have something that was meaningful for him, and a shelter workshop wasn't going to bring about that outcome. So we thought, well, maybe he could get a job then. What job could he get? And we went to the DEN providers, the Disability Employment Network, and basically the answer we got from them was that Cameron wasn't skilled enough to do anything that they could think of in open employment, even in supported employment. But by then we'd run out of options, though. That was it. That was the end of the road. So the only option that the system had for Cam was funding for Cam to do these fringe activities in community, and that's something that we already made up our minds we didn't want him to do, because it wasn't going to bring the outcome that we were looking for, and that is him being a productive, contributing member of community. So we were out of options by then.
Because the reality was, end of school was approaching, I wanted to retain my job, but I needed my income as well, and I didn't want to lose all that. I didn't want to have to stay at home to be looking after children at a time in their life when they should be out doing what other kids his age would be doing, working or studying, and we wanted the same for him.
Was it a shock to you when he wasn't accepted into the Disability Employment Network?
Yes and no. Yes, because I felt that that's what they were there for, and it was a bit of another realisation that people weren't going to accept Cameron for Cameron.
How did you feel that?
Well, I felt very devalued, extremely devalued, but I felt for Cameron too, because I know that although Cameron doesn't speak, he understands fairly well, and he's had knockbacks all of his life, and by just about everybody. I mean, this is the boy who's been through 13 years of school and doesn't have one friend that's ever come around. He's never been invited to anywhere. He's just, you know, led a very solitary life, and apart from having us in his life, it was very empty. I guess I felt that, well, we've just got to look for other things for Cameron to do. We're the people that are going to make the difference for him. And right at that time was when the concept of the micro board was introduced to us, and really, due to that and all these people working together, we were able to think, well, our dream would be for Cameron to have his own business. And I wanted to prove, I think, that Cameron was able to achieve. I felt that we could do it.
Stand there. It's all right. I'll blub, blub, blub to you too. Hey, hey, hey. Back here, please. Cameron.
How long have you been working with Cameron for?
I've worked with Cam for maybe 2 years, so I figured him out, and he's figured me out as well. Loves the ladies, loves motorbikes, loves traffic. He's good fun. Want to help? Want to pass them to me? Ah, these ones. That's it. Well done. Next one.
Everybody, I guess, in Cameron's life in the professional field said that Cameron couldn't contribute.
Do you want to grab some of these, Cam?
So I guess it was left to us to create something. And, you know, at the time we were renovating our house, and we had lots of tradespeople coming in and out. And this guy said to me, oh, yeah, you can be at home between 9 and 1 and 1 and 5. So I said, look, we've taken too much time off and we just can't do that. At the same time, I guess, I was watching Cameron. He was sitting on the lounge, and I was watching him thinking, what can we create for Cameron when he leaves school that will be meaningful to him? What can he contribute? And it dawned on me that he was fantastic at waiting for things. He would wait for people to come and take him out. He'd wait for his next meal. He'd wait for us to assist him with certain daily activities.
Just for him, not that he can speak, but if he wants to communicate, he also has to wait for people to acknowledge him.
And he was bloody good at it. He's very patient. And then I thought, well, how can we take this skill and create a career, a job, a business for him? And it grew from there. You know, people started thinking, oh, yeah, okay, well, he could wait for people that get their furniture delivered, for example. He could go to their home and for a small fee. He could wait for them with support, obviously. He could wait for fridges to be delivered from department stores. He could wait for tradespeople to come to people's homes so that the person could go to work. So his waiting business is off the ground. It's called Cam Can and Associates. And we purposely called it Cameron Can. I guess another part of his business is that he has a little contract filling up vending machines, so he does that during the week as well.
Can you take your shirt out of your mouth, please? He's out and about. He loves driving around. He loves meeting people. Take that out, please. Cameron. Yeah, and if he didn't have a job like this, he'd be sitting at home or sitting somewhere else, and it would be horrible. It would be, you know, it'd be an absolute waste because a lot of people, when they see Cam, they don't really see the person behind him. So, yeah, it would be horrible for him not to have as normal a life as possible. So, we're ready to go. So, let's get moving. Cam, I'll take yours, please. Or you want to take this one? No, grab that. Want to pass them to me? No, these ones. That's it. Well done. Next one.
Does Cam do any of this himself?
If he wants. Yeah, I always ask him if he wants to help. He hasn't got the dexterity to put it in the machine, but he's more than capable of, hands down, mate, of passing me things and doing things like that. Right, yeah.
Envisage a day when Cam might be able to do a lot of this on his own?
To be brutally honest, no. But in saying that, he doesn't have to do it all himself for it to be worthwhile for him, so I guess that's what I aim for.
He talked.
Yeah, it's and things like that just make your day. He's full of surprises. Thanks, mate. Going to help?
The carers encouraged to support Cameron to do the work. So there are some jobs that are easier for Cameron to do than others. Washing cars, for example, is something he can actively participate in quite well. The support worker is the quality control as well, so they'll ensure that the job's done properly. Cameron's costs for these jobs are very reasonable because, I mean, the aim is not to make a profit so much as it is to have Cameron doing meaningful activities during the day and providing the opportunity for him to meet people in such a way that perhaps it will develop a sustainable relationship. So he has some regular jobs, for example, on Fridays, once a month he does a weeding job, so he goes to this one house. And already, you know, the people living in that home, they come out, they have a chat with Cameron, all those things just over time working out really well.
But I've noticed a huge difference in when he used to go to school, it was a huge fight to get him out the door. But now, got his shirt on and he's got, you know, Craig turns up and, you know, away they go and he's got his head up and he looks you in the eye and all that sort of stuff. That's remarkably different to what he used to. He used to walk around with his head down all the time. His body language was so different. When he was going to places like school or other places that he didn't enjoy. He certainly didn't respond like that. Anyway, there you go.
He's just enjoying this so much. And he's quite emotional and just gorgeous. The times I notice most now where he might be a little bit unsettled or is when people he likes, like Craig today, leave. He just seems to get very tight, tense, and clench his hands. Sort of pass.
He'll cry, but these days, not very often anymore. You know, I always try to put myself in his shoes. People with disabilities have so many people come in and out of their lives so frequently that surely you must get to the stage at some point in your life where you think, if they walk out the door, I may never see them again, even if I've built this relationship with them. And how does Cameron understand that? How would he link payment to the friendships that he thinks he's building? And when they walk out the door and shut it and never come back, how would any human being respond to that if it's done hundreds of times before you're five?
And there have been people in Cameron's life who he's built a really close relationship with, and they can't come back anymore. They're just gone. That's it. And I've been really surprised sometimes, because these are people who I thought genuinely cared about Cameron, but I've been wrong.
But not these days. Now that we have people like Cameron Dixon and Peter and you know, the others in his microboard, they're here to stay. They really are. They're determined that, you know, Cameron's going to have a great life.
That's Cam's stepfather, Mark. You're listening to 360 Features and Documentaries on ABC Radio National with me, Kirsty Melville, and with 19-year-old Cameron, whose family and friends have joined together to create a microboard. Cam's microboard is called Cameron Whitelaw Support Crew, and its purpose is to support him, as a person with an intellectual disability, to live the best possible life. Cam's Auntie Meredith is a founding member of his microboard.
We're at West Arthur, which is just, we're 19 kilometres just out of Darkin, about 180 k's south of Perth.
Do you want me to come for a walk down to see the boys at the shed? Come on, Cam, we'll go down and see David and Tom. Come on. Where the tractor is.
So how often does Cam come out here and spend time with you?
Once a month he comes down for 2 days, comes for an overnight stay, and it was just an opportunity to get him involved with another young person, being his cousin Tom. He enjoys coming to the farm, he always has. He knows the farm, he knows, he likes the freedom, he likes to be able to walk for quite a period of time without people having to say stop or there's traffic or anything like that. And it has given him freedom. He loves driving in cars. So he often does escort work or bringing sheep in. And it's just a good time that he and Tom can spend together. But the lovely thing was, one night I was out there, I was doing something late at night at the farm, and there were the three of them, the carer and Tom and Cameron, sitting around the table, just having a drink after work, and it just looked lovely. It was a really nice moment just to see that happening. Yeah.
So the second bit of the agenda is Cameron's house arrangements. So, Anthea, maybe what you should do, do you want to bring everybody up to speed with what's happening with Cam's place?
Cam's place. Well, it's all furnished, thanks to everybody. when Cameron was at high school, and probably when he was about 14 or 15, we also started thinking about where he was going to live one day. So I put Cameron's name down with the Department of Housing and Works. My idea was that in about 10 years from that time, he might become a likely candidate for a home. And we were just starting to put a bit of a framework around that and how it would look and how it would happen. And for some reason that I don't really know, his lucky number came up, and there wasn't going to be an opportunity for him to be living, say, in a group home, because that's definitely not on our agenda.
Why?
Because it's institutionalised. I mean, basically, that's what a group home is. There are some nice group homes with people who care in them. But, I mean, when we as family can only visit when we're pretty much allocated times, that's not a typical life. It's with people I don't choose to live with. It's with support people who come and go. And it's not what I would want to happen to me, so it's not what I would want to have happen for Cameron. But this place is really suitable, and we didn't want to say no, even though it's a little premature. So we've kind of had to fast forward that agenda item, and Cameron is spending a lot of time there during the day when he's not working. He's doing a lot of skill development there because he now has responsibilities. He's learning to do a bit of gardening, so, you know, he's actively doing that there, including planting and watering and raking and tidying. And the key now will be to find someone to support Cameron to live in his home. So we're looking very carefully for the right person to share Cameron's place with him in a home share kind of arrangement, whereby we're offering rent-free accommodation in return for someone just there to keep an eye and supervise Cameron.
Is the role and responsibility of this person to prepare meals for Cam and things like that?
Well, when they're cooking their own meal, they'll be including Cameron. Okay. So, yes. Okay.
And it's free utilities as well, like gas and so forth.
Is it appropriate or inappropriate to ask for police clearances and things like that?
It's vital.
That's good.
Although it's not a job, Cameron is a vulnerable person.
Absolutely.
You know, it doesn't matter which way we look at it. We have a responsibility of Cameron to make sure that...
Of course.
I mean,
that's on us.
I just want to say that we'll be encouraging people to call in often, you know, unannounced, because I think it'll be a really good safety measure.
He can't tell us if something's going on with his housemate, whether he's been locked in his room or
One of my biggest fears would that Cameron would become isolated in this home. He'd be away from the family. It might be hard for us to maintain regular contact with him, that he'd get bored, he wouldn't be given the same homely treatment, I wouldn't be part of a family. On the other side of things, I guess there was the safety, that he would be properly supported, supervised in all that time. I learned over these years the moments you can leave him, but they're few and far between. Most of the time he needs to be supported to have an eye on what he's doing, and moving into a new home with a new person, new people, as caring and as well-intentioned as they might be, won't have the same instinct.
We've got four people that have answered now that seem pretty good. There's been a couple that I just said no to straight away.
Yeah.
But there's four guys now who sound pretty good.
I mean, my opinion on it is it needs to mimic a typical life.
Yeah.
And at Cameron's age, you're not going to be moving out with a middle-aged lady. You know, it's certainly not someone who's in their 40s or 50s. Who...
Hey, settle, Bruno.
You're 60, aren't you?
If there's nothing else, then we'll wind up and have lunch and then...
Head off.
It'll be great. Thanks, everybody. Good on you.
Okay. Oh, you would like some more?
Well, drink. Here, try this one. I know, Oscar's gone. It's gone.
We've just returned from 1 week's leave at Rottnest. Prior to going to Rottnest, we interviewed some people who would potentially share Cameron's home with him. All of them are very nice people, but our gut feeling was that Topia was... he just seemed to have a very easy nature. He wasn't sort of hiding anything, no false pretenses, just a genuinely nice person with really good values. And so he's going to move into Cameron's house. So I guess now we've got to pull Cameron's things together fairly quickly.
Is it a bit empty? Also, it's gone.
He has a much better drink out of that than...
Yes, yeah.
Have to give him spicy food more often.
It's Monday night and I've just returned home from Cameron's house. Tonight he's going to spend his first night there with his housemate, Topia.
I think you should pick that up.
What?
I think you have to put the detergent
in. Oh, you want to put detergent in. Yeah, good. Go on. You're funny, man.
I arrived after work and to assist with dinner and helping everyone settle in together and to help them get to know each other. He and Topia seem to get on very, very well. So for me, that's heartening. We had a new support worker come in to shower Cameron and do all those personal care kind of things. It's a little bit strange for me to have somebody do that because I've been meeting those needs for Cameron for years. And, of course, after he had gone, I, being a typical mum, was perhaps a little critical. Things that I would have done, he didn't do. I guess one of the concerns I have with Cameron moving is that I've got to put so much trust in other people to do things the way that I'd like them to be done and to the standards I'd like them to be done. Something very nice happened too. Topia introduced himself to the lady next door and she brought in a plate of scones with jam and cream. It was just so nice. Anyway, yeah, so I sort of left the house feeling good. But it's strange coming home here and I look in his room and it's empty of his things. It's just empty.
Sophia's coming to the door. Here we are, we'll carry these things.
He's coming to the door.
Morning.
Good morning.
Come in.
Did you have a better night last night?
Very good night last night.
Oh, I'm so pleased. That's great.
He went a bit early, late, 11 o'clock. He was just lying down here, but I didn't want to disturb him. Here he is.
Hey, he's got the hang of it. Hi, Cam.
Oh,
how are you going?
He got the shelf to his mouth.
I know. Take that out. He looks all warm and snug, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We've got to go and get Cameron ready because Craig will be here soon.
Hey,
I want to ask you some questions, like how is it going with Cameron? I want to ask you about how you felt like when you first came here and you first met Cameron.
I was very, what's the word? I was not sure what I'm doing, I was don't know what to expect, So I wasn't really comfortable with it, Am I supposed to be here or not? But that was the beginning. It's a different story now. Knowing him and responding to my voice is one of the best things that happened,
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
And I know you took a lot of time doing that. I noticed that you did. You sat back and you watched.
Sometimes I'm a bit quiet, and I don't say much. I don't like telling people what to do, but seeing Oscar in a way and telling him what to do in a big voice and lay down the law and all that stuff, and it's okay.
And then you earn his respect and there on builds your relationship.
That's right,
yeah.
But it's a different story now. I think you have 2 weeks now or 3, I can't remember. But
yeah.
I suppose you can't really see a big change because you've been with him constantly,
Well, I do notice a change. It's only been 2 or 3 weeks. And to me, Cameron is already a new man. He's not displaying as many of those stress-related kind of behaviours that he has.
Yep.
He's just calm. And I attribute a lot of that to you because you're a very calm person. You're a good influence upon him.
Yeah. I know sometimes I can tell that he wants him to do his own thing,
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to leave him alone, let him watch TV, walk around. And I find really I can spot the peaceful and, in him going back, Hey, Cam.
Yeah, noisy. So these sounds that Cameron makes and the, just Cameron being Cameron.
Yep.
Do they bother you?
Doesn't really bother me. What else do you want from him than laughing and, Hey, Cameron. No, it's good. It's been very good.
Long term, I always think about the time when I won't be here. There's been a slow realisation for me that I can relinquish responsibilities, and a number of the people in Cameron's life are sort of close to him in age, which is really important to us because we're not. And so they will be there long term into the future. Yeah, he's never had that in the past. He's always been on the outskirts of life, and it's just so nice to see him actually participating and contributing to that.
He's been a very good boy. I tell you what, he's been a very good boy.
And hardworking?
Oh, yes. He's been helping out with the dishes. That was brilliant.
You've been helping Tapia?
You put the spoon in there, you put the knife in there, and then you put them all back in the cupboard. Do you want to put that in there? Yeah. Excellent. Close it. Ooh, what's the fingers?
The pathway that we chose is not the easy one. The easy pathway is to let Cameron slide into a life of segregation. That would have been easy. He could have gone and done his community tourism or his, workshop, shelter workshop. People were lining up to give him that sort of life. The life we chose from him and continue to choose for him is a very hard life to organise and arrange and to achieve. If it was easy, every person with a disability would have all the things that Cameron has.
We've had a blast today. I know that he likes fast cars.
I wondered how long it took you to work that out.
We delivered some flyers and hammered it in the first, hammered it in the second, and he's just cackling himself. Then we had a rumble on the lounge. That was great fun. This is going to work out just great, really. He's a blokey bloke, right? Samoa versus Italy.
Boy, and I look at him now, you know, he's really proud.
Yeah. Yeah.
Done well. And all those things that people said you would never be able to do, you've done them.
Oh! Yeah. Sure. Do you want to chop the ball?
You've been listening to Cam Can, the story of 19-year-old Cameron Whitelaw and his family. The feature was produced by Kirsty Melville, and the technical producer was Ian Manning. A big thank you to the Lima and Whitelaw families, and to Cam's microboard. You can read more information about Cam Can and microboards, or download the program, at the 360 website. That's abc.net.au/rn/360. You'll also find photos of Cam there, and you can leave a comment about the program. On Saturday afternoon next week, Radio National will be bringing you a bunch of fascinating talks and performances from TEDx Sydney. Cutting-edge scientists, inventors, designers, musicians, and poets. That's right across the afternoon from 1 until 7 p.m. And if you listen to 360 documentaries on Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock, grab your sea legs for a salty tale of poetry recorded on a cargo ship between Cairns and Thursday Island. We'll be travelling in the company of two duffel bags, collecting poems at isolated ports along that far northern coast. You'll meet all sorts of people. Some write poetry, and others just live a poetic life, but they're all tied to the sea.
I'm really into this idea that there was a time where everything was joined together by string, basically, and that wood and rope got people around the entire world.
I have a fascination with the sea. They say a contented man looks at a fire and a restless man looks at the sea, and I feel a drawing towards the sea. I can't help myself, I always have. I was always the last one to come out of the swimming at the beach. Come on, we're going home. No, no, don't go.
It's beautiful, it's like another city underwater. There's lots of hills, lots of like canyons. Yeah, we dive through them canyons and stuff like that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Wow. Are you scared of sharks?
On the Wales Road. They found a Neanderthal skull in the North Sea, shallow sea that was land. Just a bone left, shielded once in its skim of skin, like the soft lives running their course above on the Wales Road. He's his own message in a bottle, delivered by sea, as the fire takes messages to the questionable gods.
That's Sea Things, our 360 documentaries feature, next Wednesday here on ABC Radio National. I'm Brent Clough, and I hope you can join me then.